Well, we have reached January 9th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 1759 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again. The article, chapter, and paragraph for today from the C-Cubed article, Crucible of Credible Creed, is chapter 4, paragraph 6, from Pharaoh Ahmose I, to Pharaoh Tutankhamun. There were 11 kings of Egypt who ruled from 1550 years BCE, when Ahmose began to reign. Or perhaps we should say that later we put that as slightly different, at late 1552 for Ahmose, the beginning of his reign, to 1342 years BCE, the end of Tutankhamun. But we put that later on at 1348, I believe, or 1349. I think it's 1348 for the end of Tutankhamun. I want to say Tutankhamun now, but I used to say Tutankhamun. Tutankhamun, maybe. The end of Tutankhamun is about 1348. But that's, you know, that's because later on we wrote more about this and we studied it in more detail. Of these 11 pharaohs, and here's another refinement, 10 of the mummies, it says, have been located, but actually that's not correct because Akhenaten has not been located, and so that makes only 9 that have been located, but that's because we later on found out about the identification of the skull, KV-55, as being Smenkhkari, or at least certainly not Akhenaten. The bodies of Egyptian kings were preserved by mummifying. Now, the reason why Akhenaten couldn't be the pharaoh of the Exodus is because, or at least it's unlikely, is because he moved his capital city to the south, to Amarna, and therefore he wouldn't have been in the right area for the Exodus to have taken place from there. The bodies of Egyptian kings were preserved by mummifying, a process of drying and wrapping the bodies before burial. In case you haven't heard of this, they removed the internal organs and things that would cause the body to rot or to decay. The missing mummy, the one that we're concerned with and interested in, is that of Pharaoh Thutmose I. I mean, the fact that his mummy is missing is important, and it might be missing as a result of him being swept or having been swept away by Jehovah. God's word records that Pharaoh himself brought his troops with him on the chase after the Israelites in the book of Exodus, if you read chapter 14. When they left Egypt, it is there written that not one of the Egyptians were let remain. That's important because that means Pharaoh must have died also. And that Israel saw some bodies dead on the shore. Do you believe that it is possible for Pharaoh to have let his anger get the better of him than to have lost his life drowning in the Red Sea so that his body is forever lost? Might we believe this is why Thutmose's mummy isn't found? Okay, so at least the body of the pharaoh who chased the Israelites, was lost to the world as we know it today. We haven't found the body yet. Might we believe that this is why Thutmose's mummy isn't found? The fact that, you see, the Exodus has the reason. It gives a reason why his mummy was not found, if he was truly the Pharaoh of the Exodus, whereas the other pharaohs, although I suppose they perhaps could have found his body if he had been one of the other pharaohs, but this is rather incredible and important, the fact that all of them perished, so there was no one there to recover the bodies either. At least no one there at the time. But the curious thing remains, his body was never found, and we believe he was the correctly identified Pharaoh of the Exodus, based on many, many things besides that. But that's another thing that points to Thutmose the First as having been the Pharaoh of the Exodus. It's so, you know, it's rather obvious to think about it, but no one else has pointed to this. I didn't find anyone else who identified Thutmose the First as the Pharaoh of the Exodus. Nobody else pointed to that Pharaoh. Only we. It's remarkable. I was the only one who thought of it, who saw it, who arrived at it, who concluded it. At least, I never saw anybody else so far. Revelation. Revelation we're going to do today, one of the chapters, but Ecclesiastes 11 and... Where is it? It's crazy. I'd singled it out already. I'd chosen it. Yeah. And little children, this is our proverb for today, Ecclesiastes 11 and 8. For if a man should live even many years, in all of them let him rejoice, and let him remember the days of darkness, though they could be many. Every day that has come in is vanity. Now, when we're successful in life, we don't become successful because people give us everything. We become successful because we are fighting to survive, and we're fighting to overcome our negative thoughts, and we're overturning, we're winning out against the days of darkness. This is how we succeed. At least that's what I've found in my own case. Now we need to continue. If we're going to get this finished, we've got to continue reading 1 Kings 15. And in the 18th year of King Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, Abijam became king over Judah. Abijam was the son of Rehoboam. 3 years he reigned in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Maacah, the granddaughter of Abishalom. And he went on walking in all the sins of his father. That would be Rehoboam, that he did prior to him, and his heart did not prove to be complete with Jehovah his God like the heart of David his forefather. For on account of David, Jehovah his God gave him a lamp in Jerusalem by raising his son up after him and keeping Jerusalem in existence, because David did what was right in the eyes of Jehovah. And he did not turn aside from anything that he had commanded him all the days of his life. Let me do something here. There's no research guide. Here it is. I need to find it. I need to align this. What I want to do is, I never showed the text of the article in case somebody wants to have a textual copy of it. I need to produce the textual copy. So here it is, 4-6 of the article. There's the first part of it, and then we'll go down. Where is the bottom of this? Okay. The bottom is right at the wrapping the bodies, let's say, or the missing mummy. Okay, that part. And then from the missing mummy down to his anger get the better. And then from his anger get the better down to the end. Just so it's possible for someone to obtain the written copy of it from the video. And it says in verse 4 of 1 Kings 15. Okay, no, just a minute. Verse 3, we better start saying that again. And he went on walking, Abijam did, in all the sins of his father that he did prior to him, and his heart did not prove to be complete with Jehovah his God, like the heart of David his forefather. For on account of David, Jehovah his God gave him a lamp in Jerusalem by raising his son up after him and keeping Jerusalem in existence. Yeah, we read that. But we need to keep reading verse 5, because David did what was right in the eyes of Jehovah, and he did not turn aside from anything that he had commanded him all the days of his life, only in the matter of Uriah the Hittite. David sinned in that regard. And warfare itself took place between Rehoboam and Jeroboam all the days of his life. All the days of the life of the son of Rehoboam, too, before Abijam became king. As for the rest of the affairs of Abijam and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the affairs of the days of the kings of Judah? There was warfare also that took place between Abijam and Jeroboam. Finally, Abijam lay down with his forefathers, and they buried him in the city of David. And Asa, his son, began to reign in place of him. So we have the 18th year of Jeroboam, because Rehoboam ruled from the same point very nearly as Jeroboam did. And Rehoboam reigned 17 years, so in the 18th year of Jeroboam, after the death of Rehoboam, after those 17 years, Abijam became king, and then he reigned for 3 years, it said, right? It's quite a bit, in verse 2, it said 3 years, but there's a bit of an accounting problem, because it says in the 20th year of Jeroboam, the king of Israel, Asa reigned as king of Judah, so there's only 2 years have passed, it seems to be, but it's all about the calendars and how the years are accounted, we would assume, perhaps. And 41 years Asa reigned in Jerusalem, and his grandmother's name was Maacah, the granddaughter of Abishalom. And Asa proceeded to do what was right in the eyes of Jehovah, like David his forefather. Accordingly, he had the male temple prostitutes pass out of the land and removed all the dungy idols that his forefathers had made. As for even Maacah, his grandmother, he went on to remove her from being lady because she had made a horrible idol to the sacred pole, after which Asa cut down her horrible idol and burned it at the torrent valley of Kidron. And the high places he did not remove. Nevertheless, Asa's heart itself proved to be complete with Jehovah all his days, and he began to bring in the things made holy by his father and the things made holy by himself into the house of Jehovah, silver and golden articles. And warfare itself took place between Asa and Baasha, the king of Israel, all their days. We tend to forget the kings of Israel, who reigned Jeroboam, Nadab, and then Baasha, Elah, Zimri. I almost had forgotten all of these kings because they were from the wicked kingdom of Israel, and we normally think about Judah. The kingdom of Judah, which was the remaining kings in the line of David who were ruling. So Baasha, the king of Israel, came up against Judah and began to build Ramah to allow no one to go out or come in to Asa, the king of Judah. At that, Asa took all the silver and the gold that were left in the treasures of the house of Jehovah and the treasures of the house of the king, King Asa, and put them in the hand of his servants, and King Asa now sent them to Ben-Hadad, the son of Tabrimmon, the son of Hezion, the king of Syria, who was dwelling in Damascus, saying, "There is a covenant between me and you and between my father and your father. Here I have sent you a present of silver and gold. Come, do break your covenant with Baasha, the king of Israel, that he may withdraw from me. Accordingly, Ben-Hadad listened to King Asa and sent the chiefs of the military forces that were his against the cities of Israel, and went striking down Ijon and Dan and Abel Beth-Maacah and all Kinnereth. Oh, the Sea of Kinnereth is the small lake north of the Salt Sea, as far as all the land of Naphtali. And it came about that as soon as Baasha heard of it, he immediately quit building Ramah and continued dwelling in Tirzah. And King Asa, for his part, summoned all Judah. There was none exempt, and they proceeded to carry the stones of Ramah and the timbers of it with which Baasha had been building. And King Asa began to build with them Geba in Benjamin and Mizpah. And I was looking up the geography of Egypt just to find out the other day where today actually I looked it up, but I said something about Giza. It's actually just across the Nile from Cairo, whereas I sort of missed that. In the Fayum region where Joseph's Canal is south of that on the Nile, but still much further north than Thebes is, or Luxor. As for the rest of the affairs of Asa and all his mightiness and all that he did in the cities that he built, are they not written in the book of the affairs of the days of the kings of Judah? Only at the time of his growing old, he got diseased in his feet. Finally, Asa lay down with his forefathers and was buried with his forefathers in the city of David, his forefather. And Jehoshaphat, his son, began to reign in place of him, little children. As for Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, he became king over Israel in the second year of Asa, the king of Judah. Because, of course, we would take the 22 years of Jeroboam, right? Subtract the 17 years of Rehoboam, leaves 5. Then subtract the 3 years of Abijam, leaves 2. So there'd be 2 years of King Asa's reign, roughly, when the son of Jeroboam would become king. It's just the fact that it says the second year seems to be wrong, because it would imply only 1 year had passed, but it's close. And he continued to reign over Israel 2 years. Nadab did, in Israel, north of Judah. You know, but we have these accounting difficulties all the time in accounting for the kings and when they began to rule. There are slight accounting difficulties with regard to the exact dates when they began to rule. And he kept doing what was bad in the eyes of Jehovah. Speaking about Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, the second king over the wicked breakaway kingdom of Israel, who didn't worship Jehovah. And Nadab went on walking in the way of his father and in his sin, with which he caused Israel to sin. And Baasha, the son of Ahijah of the house of Issachar, began to conspire against him, and Baasha got to strike him down at Gibbethon, which belonged to the Philistines, while Nadab and all Israel were besieging Gibbethon. So Baasha put him to death in the third year of Asa, the king of Judah, and began to reign in place of him. And it came about that as soon as he became king, he struck down all the house of Jeroboam. He did not let anyone breathing remain of Jeroboam's until he had annihilated them, according to Jehovah's word that he had spoken by means of his servant Ahijah the Shilonite. 1 Kings 14 and 10. Here I am bringing calamity upon the house of Jeroboam, and I shall certainly cut off from Jeroboam anyone urinating against a wall. That was from the chapter we read yesterday. On account of the sins of Jeroboam, with which he sinned and with which he caused Israel to sin, and by his offensiveness with which he offended Jehovah, the God of Israel. As for the rest of the affairs of Nadab and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the affairs of the days of the kings of Israel? We have a split kingdom, a divided kingdom now. We've got Israel in the north and Judah in the south. And warfare itself took place between Asa and Baasha, the king of Israel, all their days. It was divided, of course, after the death of Solomon. In the third year of Asa, now we date Asa's year one as about 958, because Solomon reigned 40 years from 1017, which is 977 for Rehoboam year one, and 17 years after that's 960 for Abijam, and 3 years for Abijam gives us 957 or 958 because of the way the accounting corresponded with the kings of Israel. In the third year of Asa, so it should be about 956 or so, Baasha the son of Ahijah became king over all Israel in Tirzah for 24 years. So we can keep account between the two kingdoms by comparing the years of the kings of Israel with the years of Judah. We can help keep account of the years somewhat better that way. And he kept doing what was bad, did Baasha, in the eyes of Jehovah, and went walking in the way of Jeroboam, whose house he had eliminated or wiped out, and in his sin with which he caused Israel to sin. And that's the end of 1 Kings 15. It's a lot of warfare happening in the time of the divided kingdom, as we see there. Ezekiel 17, and the word of Jehovah continued to occur to me, saying, Son of man, propound a riddle and compose a proverbial saying toward the house of Israel, and you must say, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. The great eagle, having great wings with long pinions full of plumage, which had color variety, came to Lebanon and proceeded to take the tree top of the cedar. He plucked off the very top of its young shoots and came bringing it to the land of Canaan. In his city of traders he placed it. Furthermore, he took some of the seed of the land and put it in a field for seed. As a willow by vast waters, as a willow tree he placed it, and it began to sprout and gradually became a luxuriantly growing vine, low in height, inclined to turn its foliage inward, and as for its roots, they gradually came to be under it. And it finally became a vine and produced shoots and sent forth branches. And there came to be another great eagle, having great wings and having large pinions. And look, this very vine stretched its roots hungrily toward him, and its foliage it thrust out to him in order for him to irrigate it away from the garden beds where it was planted. Into a good field by vast waters it was already transplanted in order to produce boughs and to bear fruit, to become a majestic vine. Say, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. Will it have success? Will not someone tear out its very roots and make its very fruit scaly? And must not all its freshly plucked sprouts become dry? It will become dry, neither by a great arm nor by a multitudinous people will it have to be lifted up from its roots. And look, although transplanted, will it have success? Will it not dry up completely, even as when the east wind touches it? In the garden beds of its sprout, it will dry up. And the word of Jehovah continued to occur to me, saying, Say, please, to the rebellious house, do you people actually know what these things mean? Say, look, the king of Babylon came to Jerusalem and proceeded to take its king and its princes and bring them to himself at Babylon. Furthermore, he took one of the royal seed and concluded a covenant with him and brought him into an oath. And the foremost men of the land he took away. We know that, well, it looks like it's talking about the king who was taken to Babylon. Jehoiakim, of course, was taken. He was taken, as we already saw. Furthermore, he took one of the royal seed, in order that the kingdom might become low, unable to lift itself up, that by keeping his covenant it might stand. But he finally rebelled against him. And this is, of course, he had set up He had set up Zedekiah as king, and he finally rebelled against him in sending his messengers to Egypt for it to give him horses and a multitudinous people. Will he have success? Will he escape? He was doing these things and who has broken a covenant. And will he actually escape? As I am alive is the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah, in the place of the king who put in as king the one that despised his oath and that broke his covenant, with him in the midst of Babylon he will die. And that's what happened to Zedekiah. He did die in Babylon, and this is a prophecy of Ezekiel. It hadn't happened yet because Jerusalem had not been destroyed yet, and Zedekiah was still king at this point. And by a great military force, verse 17, and by a multitudinous congregation, Pharaoh will not make him effective in the war by throwing up a siege rampart and by building a siege wall in order to cut off many souls. And he has despised an oath in breaking a covenant. And look, he had given his hand and has done even all these things. He will not make his escape. Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said, talking about Zedekiah. As I am alive, surely my oath that he has despised and my covenant that he has broken, I will even bring it upon his head, and I will spread over him my net, and he will certainly be caught in my hunting net, and I will bring him to Babylon and put myself on judgment with him there, respecting his unfaithfulness with which he acted against me. And as regards all the fugitives of his in all his bands, by the sword they will fall, and the ones left remaining will be spread abroad even to every wind, and you people will have to know that I myself, Jehovah, have spoken it. This is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. I myself will also take and put some of the lofty treetop of the cedar. From the top of its twigs I shall pluck off a tender one, and I will myself transplant it upon a high and lofty mountain. On the mountain of the height of Israel I shall transplant it, and it will certainly bear boughs and produce fruit and become a majestic cedar. And under it there will actually reside all the birds of every wing. In the shadow of its foliage they will reside, and all the trees of the field will have to know that I myself, Jehovah, have abased the high tree, have put on high the low tree, have dried up the still moist tree, and have made the dry tree blossom. I myself, Jehovah, have spoken and have done it. And in the commentary of Clark, he says this is talking about the time which was coming regarding the Messiah. Makes an easy and natural transition to the Messiah, Clark said in his commentary on Ezekiel 17. Revelation, we're doing Revelation chapter 9 today. And the fifth angel blew his trumpet, and I saw a star that had fallen from heaven to the earth, and the key of the pit of the abyss was given him. We don't have a lot of time here. And he opened the pit of the abyss, and smoke ascended out of the pit as the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun was darkened, also the air, by the smoke of the pit. And out of the smoke locusts came forth upon the earth, and authority was given them, the same authority as the scorpions of the earth have. And they were told to harm no vegetation of the earth, nor any green thing, nor any tree, but only those men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. And it was granted the locusts not to kill them, but that these shall be tormented 5 months. And the torment upon them was as torment by a scorpion when it strikes a man. And in those days the men will seek death, but will by no means find it. And they will desire to die, but death keeps fleeing from them. And the likeness of the locusts resembled horses prepared for battle, and upon their heads were what seemed to be crowns like gold. And their faces were as men's faces, but they had hair as women's hair. And their teeth were as those of lions, and they had breastplates like iron breastplates, and the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots of many horses running into battle. Also they have tails and stings like scorpions, and in their tails is their authority to hurt the men 5 months. They have over them a king, the angel of the abyss. In Hebrew his name is Abaddon, but in Greek he has the name Apollyon. The one woe is past. Look, two more woes are coming after these things. The angel of the abyss, the destroyer, Abaddon, that is like Jesus on the white horse with his bow, you know, destroying. The one woe is in the four horsemen of the apocalypse, which we studied already. The woe in the book of Revelation, the one woe is past, verse 12. Two more woes are coming after these things. And the sixth angel blew his trumpet, and I heard one voice out of the horns of the golden altar that is before God say to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, untie the four angels that are bound at the great river Euphrates. And the four angels were untied, who have been prepared for the hour and day and month and year to kill a third of the men. And the number of the armies of cavalry was two myriads of myriads. I heard the number of them. And this is how I saw the horses in the vision and those seated on them. They had fire red and hyacinth blue and sulfur yellow breastplates, like, you know, magenta, cyan, and yellow. And the heads of the horses were as heads of lions, and out of their mouths fire and smoke and sulfur issued forth. By these three plagues, a third of the men were killed from the fire and the smoke and the sulfur which issued forth from their mouths. For the authority of the horses is in their mouths and in their tails, for their tails are like serpents and have heads, and with these they do harm. But the rest of the men who were not killed by these plagues did not repent of the works of their hands, so that they should not worship the demons and the idols of gold and silver and copper and stone and wood, which can neither see nor hear nor walk, nor talk either for that matter. And they did not repent of their murders, nor these men, that is, nor of their spiritistic practices. They could certainly talk, but they didn't repent of their spiritistic practices or their murders, nor of their fornication, nor of their thefts. That's the end of our reading for today. That concludes Revelation chapter 9. We've got 1 minute, and just barely got through that. So that's a tough one. So we're studying 4-6 today of the Crucible article. Tomorrow we'll be doing 4-7. It's a fascinating story because no one else has identified Thutmose was the first as the Pharaoh of the Exodus. That's only us. It's only me, at least. And whoever wants to believe what I'm saying about it and writing about it, it looks like it has to be Thutmose, and we've got much more evidence too. We talked about, there's an article already written that discusses the name of Thutmose and how it proves that he was the king of the Exodus based on other evidence, the writing of another historian or something written in the ancient records that we have at our disposal. We want to talk about that later. January 9th, 2024 of the Common Era. That concludes our video for today. It was great seeing you. I'm privileged to be with you. The time is 18:32 hours Eastern Standard Time. And on my behalf, this is Gully. And this is Cassie, my two timepieces, saying bye for now.